face. We run in silence the rest of the hour. This has been happening every day for nearly 2 weeks. We seem to be running together. Not on purpose, though. We both simply seem to want to run at this time in this park daily. "Have any free time this morning at headquarters?" he asks. "I've got a packed schedule." Never too packed for me. My lips twist wryly. His lips twist wryly, too. "We've got some business to discuss with you." "What kind of business?" I ask suspiciously. "Yours or mine?"
"Isn't it the same?"
I stop running, curious. More curious than our cats, as my mother says. "What is it?" He laughs.
"Patience, Grasshopper. I'll have Carlisle run it by you."
I glance at his huge black dog, promptly sitting protectively at his side. I grin. "He likes his flea collar?" He eyes the dog as if only now realizing he seems mighty comfortable with it. He smiles, then hooks his finger on the end of the collar.
"Come on, Jack."
He heads to the car.
"Want a ride?"
"I'm fine, thanks." Looking disappointed, he opens the door and hops in, and they drive away. I stay stretching for a little bit, and I can't seem to stop myself from replaying our conversations and grinning. Why do I keep running in this park? Why does he keep running in this park? Why is it suddenly important for me to know? I knew I would be challenged in many ways when I took on the job, but I never imagined I'd become so fascinated not only with the aspects of campaigning, but with the candidate himself. He is a man who could, in less than a year, become our president. Knowledge about our country and a genuine understanding of how it works seeps from his pores. I'm intensely curious to know more about his views, but it's Matt who makes me most curious of all. On lunch break, I hear that the news of Matt asking Rhonda to change the schedule to accommodate a request of mine seems to have not sat too well with some of the other female aides.
"You know, he's never paid much attention to any of us."
Martha flips her hair, obviously annoyed. "Matt and Charlotte's families go back," Allison says as I walk in.
"Oh?"
She turns wide, questioning eyes my way. "A little," I hedge.
"Ah, so that's why."
She seems relieved. The energy in the room seems to shift, and all the attention flees from my way over to the door. My eyes flick over to Matt when he stops by the small cafeteria section to pull out a bottle of water. He cracks it open, thoughtful as he looks at the group of women, then raises his head and sees me. I smile and pass through the door, and when my shoulder brushes his, my skin crackles heatedly. Absently, I brush my hand down my arm as I go back to my desk. I'm going through my pile of letters when Carlisle stops by my desk.
"Matt wants you to be his new scheduler," Carlisle says.
I start in surprise. Me?
"You'll need to be open to traveling. We'll be visiting all 50 states. It's a good idea for there to be only one scheduler, or else a ton of mix-ups can arise. Trust me, not fun to have something in New Hampshire an hour before you have something in San Francisco."
I gape at him.
"Let's run down what's expected of you for the following months," Carlisle begins.
I'm briefed in a 6x6 room on my duties as political scheduler.
"As our one and only scheduler, you're to oversee Matt's agenda for the entire campaign. You'll have political aides and advance teams to organize. You'll book his gym workouts, make sure the planes and buses are all stocked with essentials, organize the rallies, and his every social and personal engagement for the rest of the year. We need a good balance among all his engagements. Do you think you can do that?"
My head is spinning, but I force myself to reply. If Matt thinks I can, then I can, I say bravely. He shoots me a dire look.
"Just to be clear, a scheduling mistake could cost us the whole campaign. Every minute and second must be accounted for. His father's scheduler remained at headquarters during his campaign, but Matt wants a more hands-on approach."
He seems concerned about my ability to do the job, so I nod more firmly than necessary.
"Rhonda will be on press coordination, but she can help if you get stuck in any part of the process. She'll fill you in on any questions you might have."
Matt comes in to see Carlisle, and when my arm brushes his as I pass through the door, my skin crackles heatedly. I'm smoothing fingers over the tingling skin of my upper arm as I head to my table when Carlisle's assistant approaches.
Charlotte.
She points in the direction of the floor where Matt has his office. You'll be over here now, outside Matt's office. I swallow, then start gathering my personal things, more determined than ever to make a difference and prove to myself that I can. 13. Warning. Charlotte. It's my first day as his official scheduler when I arrive at campaign headquarters the following Monday, step off the elevator, and immediately get to work. I'm determined to impress and be as kick-ass as everyone on Team Hamilton is proving to be, especially now that I'm his scheduler. There's only one of me. I'm trying to get into the meat of Matt's most pressing things to do when Rhonda appears.
How are we doing?
She asks me as she approaches.
Great, I grin,
then spread out a few pages with scattered itineraries. It takes work to really oversee Matt's schedule, not only because it's his, but because it involves so many people.
I'm a bit concerned I'm losing some valuable time with the times it takes for the team to arrive by bus. I wonder if I shouldn't make use of that time somehow for Matt.
Rhonda drags a chair over and looks at the pages. Matt doesn't want to plaster slogans across every town and city in the continental United States. He's doing aggressive online campaigns with both personal opinions and proposed solutions. But even with the online campaign, his schedule is killer. It could literally kill a man that wasn't as energetic as this one is. I can't imagine either President Jacobs or Gordon Thompson, the Republican frontrunner, both much older and much less athletic, enduring it. As the main scheduler, and as we embark on the touring of the country, I'll be working in the field now. Rather than being cooped up in headquarters, I will be out there, overseeing all the local field campaign aides, ensuring everything runs smoothly on every location and engagement Matt is in. Rhonda has made it repeatedly clear that my job is to manage both Matt's personal and professional schedules, and not only that, but I'm to manage the advance teams that will arrive at each location before Matt does to make sure everything is as it should be. She tells me that a good flow of scheduling is paramount for the most effective campaigning, that I need to focus on Matt's personal time first and foremost, then shoot for a balance between events aimed at high schools, veterans, industrials, the average working man. I am to include all minorities and definitely women and young people, who seem to be his most devoted fans. To this list, after talking it over with the managers, I'm adding hospitals and hospices in the mix as well.
He needs time to run every day. Every single day, be sure to give him an hour's run and at least a half hour to shower and prep for the day. Trust me, he's on the ball and so much sharper when he started his day with that. Add a night off during the weekend so he can see his friends and family or simply have time on his own, she said when she first explained this to me.
Just one night off? I'm appalled to think he's working so much.
Only one. That came from Matt himself, Rhonda assured me, but she looked as wide-eyed and concerned as I did.
Now we sit here as we jointly create his first active campaigning schedule, one where he'll be traveling extensively. As Gordon Thompson and Harold Jacobs are throwing themselves full-fledged into their campaigns, so are we. Our first states to visit are states known to be primarily red or blue, which means Texas for primarily Republican and California for primarily Democratic.
Charlotte, there's been talk.
I lift my head. Excuse me?
Some of the aides.
She signals out the door.
They talk about Matt paying more attention to you. Allison has appeased them that you're childhood friends, but I'd still like to give you some friendly advice.
I feel so shocked and uncomfortable at the thought of anyone assuming anything outrageous that I'm mute, unblinking as I meet Rhonda's friendly but concerned gray gaze.
Don't, she says quietly, holding my stare.
She shakes her head, glancing down at the itinerary, slashing a big red line over one event and adding a big red arrow for us to move it to the next day.
Matt is unshakable right now where he stands.
She looks at me again.
He owns the heart of every American simply because we all watched him lose his father the way he did, keep his mother on her feet, and remain pretty down to earth and humble despite him being one of the most famous men in the world. Any dirt the parties want to dig up on him, there's nothing Carlyle hasn't studied and can easily counterattack.
My eyes widen.
You're not implying, Charlotte, I'm 55, married twice with 3 children, she says, smiling a bit like my mother did when Matt and his father, the president, came over for dinner and she told me Matt was handsome.
If you believe in him being the solution we're looking for, I do,
I say vehemently, dragging the schedule over to my side and frowning down at it, trying hard to concentrate on it again.
Then keep it professional. You'll be spending a lot of time together.
I think of the things I think about when I curl up alone in my apartment and a warmth of guilt creeps up my cheeks, but I stare down at the schedule and try to regain my focus. Once Rhonda and I finally wrap up the beginning campaign schedule, she claps her hands.
Guess we're done here. You'll make sure he gets a copy?
Of course. She dons her coat, and we say goodbye as she heads to her new office and I head out of mine and toward Matt's. As I approach, I hear the whispers of Carlisle telling Matt,
We should be unearthing the dirt on Jacobs. He made many mistakes during his administration. And don't get me started on Gordon.
We're running a clean campaign. And we're playing defense. No attacks unless we're personally attacked. We counterattack. Then and only then.
Matt, these two are specialists at attacking. That's the way elections are won. You make people afraid, and then you shine the light and don the hat of their savior. Personally, I think Jacobs has let the economy go to shit just so he can come up with a shining plan to save it. As for Gordon, hell, he will throw out everything wrong with you, starting with the fact that you didn't serve in the military.
Neither did he.
But he'll be the one to say it.
And make it easier to point out that I was doing other things that my father, the president, had asked me to. He wanted me to learn to be a leader. Hell, Benton, it bugs the shit out of me he didn't let me serve, and you know it.
Gordon will rub it in. Jacobs will keep on the First Lady issue.
Really? If that's what we have to be afraid of.
Matt lets out a low, self-assured chuckle. Carlisle sighs.
You have a bit of a sense of humor, which makes you approachable. But God, your stubbornness, Matt.
I knock on the door. Matt lifts his head, waves me in, and suddenly he is watching every step I take into the room. I set the folder on his desk, and as I slowly leave the room, I hear Carlisle insist.
We need more slogans, Matt. People need to know what you bring to the table.
I bring me.
Carlisle sighs.
Carlisle. For years the public has come to believe every promise made by every candidate has been pure bullshit. Nobody believes in them anymore. Politics have been totally tainted by propaganda. It wasn't like this in the beginning, Carlisle. There weren't slogan campaigns. Hell, until Andrew Jackson, not even slandering campaigns. I serve my country.
Speaking of, our opponents are barely underway with primaries and they're already attacking the streets with propaganda.
Matt listens attentively, then says,
We're in modern times, Carlisle. The internet works. Hamilton is tree-friendly.
He angles his head.
Charlotte?
Matt raises his voice as he calls my name when I step outside. I peer back in.
You can save more trees as the president,
Carlisle mumbles, as Matt waves me forward. I'm tempted to tell Carlisle that I do like Matt's different approaches. Political figures are loved and hated across the world. They've come to be seen as necessary evils. But it wasn't that way with Washington. He's the only president who received every single vote. He was a champion, a leader, not a necessary evil. There was no propaganda, no marketing campaign, no bullshit slogans. Matt is not a politician, and I think it makes a difference. He gives no practiced speeches. He doesn't even look 100% polished. He prefers sweaters and slacks and button-down shirts when he goes out in public. He looks steady, which is what the country wants. A little bit rebellious, which is what the country needs. And different, the embodiment of the change we crave. But I keep my thoughts to myself. Carlisle exits and Matt steeples his fingers, nodding in the direction of the now empty doorway.
What do you think?
About what Carlisle says?
He nods, that infuriatingly adorable dancing sparkle appearing in his eyes.
I smile privately. I do think you're stubborn, I admit, scrunching my nose playfully at him.
Is that all?
I shrug mysteriously. But no, that's not all at all. He has good judgment, drive, and discipline.
When the character debates come up later in the game, Gordon has had four wives. President Jacobs lets his wife rule the country for him, and Matt, on the other hand, is a very balanced man. He listens to opinions of people he respects and whose intelligence matches his own. But ultimately, he makes his own choice. We've raised hundreds of millions of dollars for his campaign, most of the funds coming from small donations from average Americans ready for a change.
The technological infrastructure we've set up at headquarters in order to reach the 300-plus million Americans through the net is unprecedented until this election. But people's interests have never been harder to pique than in the days that we live in now.
I think going heavy on the internet can get you a lot of traction with the young voters, I finally say. And if you can figure out a way to get them interested in your most exciting plans with each alphabet letter, it could really stick.
He rubs his chin with the tips of his two index fingers, makes a hmm sound, and frowns thoughtfully.
C is for Charlotte.
J is for junk food in cafeterias, which must be stopped at once. He laughs. I signal at his schedule. Here's the schedule for the months of April and May. Since things get very heavy in late April, I thought I might include a free weekend for you to recharge.
That's thoughtful of you.
He slips on his glasses and scans it. Yeah, well, I'm a thoughtful gal, I say. I turn away and glance out the window because something about the times he slips on his glasses always gets to me.
A thoughtful gal who somehow manages to make me think of her a lot.
I turn my attention back to him in surprise as he looks up at me over the rims. My heart thuds. He sets the schedule down and pries the glasses off, folding them and setting them over the schedule, his eyes fixed on me. A silence settles in the room, making me aware of how disquieted I am on the inside.
Why did you want me to be your new scheduler? I ask quietly.
He leans back with a sardonic smile that quickly turns admiring.
Because I believe you have a good head on your shoulders. You're dedicated and smart. And anyway,
he grins even wider.
I thought you were a tad too soft to keep answering those phone calls and letters.
I am so not soft.
P is for pudding.
So not pudding, Matt. I narrow my eyes and lean one hand on his desk. You wanted me to keep an eye out for letters like that one little Matt sent.
And I know you still are.
I scowl. How do you know me so well? Hmm?
He spreads out his arms and crosses them behind his head. Some say I'm a perceptive man.
I disagree. You failed to see how stone-hearted I am. Able to read your letters day after day. How hard I can be.
H is for heart of stone.
He laughs.
It's so nice to hear him laugh. No, Charlotte. It's optimally just one word per letter, so that'd make you just all heart.
I shake my head, frowning. I can show you my hard-heartedness in your next schedule I draft.
Be my guest. I thrive under pressure.
Good for you, 'cause I'm bringing it.
You always do.
His gaze slides past my shoulder at the sound of a soft knock. Allison is at the door, watching us, narrowed-eyed. Matt, the pictures you asked for? She walks in as I excuse myself and leave, but soon Allison catches up with me.
Were you just flirting with Matt?
What? No, we were having a discussion.
You were discussing with Matt?
No. I flush and head to my desk, sit down, and lift my head to glance past his office window, where he's wearing those sexy glasses of his, reading, a hand over his mouth as if to cover his smile. 14. Eyes. Charlotte. I called Children's National and told Carlisle about Matt's visit so he could alert the press coordinator and everyone who needed to be involved.
You're coming with me, Matt says before he leaves.
Me?
It was your idea.
I groan inwardly. Spending more time with Matt is the last thing I need right now. But I do love seeing him in action, so I hurry to slip into my sweater and follow him outside. When we reach the hospital, there's a small crowd waving placards and chanting. Matt! One of the younger female crowd members breathlessly gasps out his name. Matt Hamilton! Her friend calls, louder, cupping her hands around her mouth so that her voice carries over. He thanks them, then waits for me to go in along with Wilson. Little Matt is wearing a Redskins t-shirt, a matching cap, and an IV. The way his eyes light up when his hero enters the room makes my chest tighten. I turn away and try to regroup when I hear Matt's voice.
Heard there was a tiger in the building. I had to come see.
Where? The boy asks excitedly.
I'm looking right at him.
When I turn back around, Matt is chucking the boy's cap, smiling down at him. The boy grins.
Wow, you came.
Matt pulls up a chair to sit next to him in bed. Charlotte, the lady you see by the door, seems to be as big a fan of yours as you are of me.
Wow,
he says. Soon they get a crowd. Little Matt tells Matt he wants to be a football player when he grows up. The parents approach me and begin telling me how grateful they are as Matt and little Matt chat.
If you win, you'll invite me to the White House,
tiny Matt says. Not if. When. You're coming to the White House, Matt promises. He plays chess with the bedridden boy. The nurses start to line up out in the hall, grinning and ogling. It's not the fact that he's doing this. It's the fact that you can tell he's genuinely having fun that touches me. I believed in him, Hamilton, and all that the name represents. But right now, if I'd never seen him and had a stupid little crush on him, if he'd never been raised under the spotlight and with the fame of his name, it's today that Matt, for all the flaws the media tries to exaggerate, wins my vote. When we leave, Wilson picks us up at the curb. Matt is quiet. I am too. Thank you. His voice is low and sounds achingly honest.
Makes me sad.
My own voice cracks, so I stop talking. I glance out the window and try to regroup. He seems to realize he's out of his element with a nearly weeping female in the car. Let's go get you some food.
No.
He frowns, then his eyes gleam in confusion and amusement. You're too warm for politics, Charlotte. We need to toughen you up.
Take me sword fighting, but not eating. I'm not hungry right now.
I sigh and shoot him a sidelong glance. It's your fault. Pardon? I wouldn't be in politics if you hadn't run. Says the lady who offered to help me when she was, what, 7? I arch my brows. 11. I thrust my chin out. I can still vote for Gordon. God, no. No, he says emphatically. He laughs and runs his hand in frustration over his hair. Well, someone needs to knock you down a peg. Gordon Thompson has my vote, I declare. You wound me, Charlotte, he says. Oh, you look so wounded, ha-ha. He looks deathly sober, except for his eyes, laughing at me. My wounds run deep. How deep? This deep? I hold my fingers a hair's breadth apart. He frowns, then takes them to readjust them to a centimeter. This deep. I should laugh. It was funny. Up until he touched me. Now it's warm and gooey, and he's looking at me with a frozen smile and intent eyes. I see a flash of yearning in his eyes, yearning as deep as I feel, truly deep, not measured in tiny fractions. I laugh finally as I try to stifle the sensations shooting through me.
Wow.
I look at the centimeter.
A centimeter? That's deep.
I refer to the space between his fingers, but I don't know what we're talking about anymore. I told you. He smirks. He lowers his hands, and I can't help but notice how strong and long-fingered they are as he drops them to his side.
Every living woman in America has probably had fantasies about Matt. And I have him close enough that my senses swirl.
I remain affected throughout our ride. My mind rushes, wondering.
Simply wondering.
Matt checks some emails, his thigh touching mine. He doesn't move it away. I wonder if I want to move it away. No, I'm out of air and burning inside, and I don't want to. I have to remind myself that what I'm doing here is so much more valuable than a silly little crush. What I'm doing here transcends beyond me, beyond even Matt. Not only has campaigning been exciting, but hearing about Matt's views and ideas keeps renewing my hope. I hadn't fully realized how much we missed a strong leader, an inspiring leader, until every time I stare at the one I want. He could make such a difference. A man like him could make such a difference. So we ride like this, in silent tension, my mind full of Matt, and my body empty. His eyes meet mine, burning with importance. I want you to be my eyes and my heart, to keep me in touch with the real people out there, the ones my whole life I've never gotten to meet.
Okay, Matt, I say.
And then he leans over, and I catch my breath and close my eyes when his lips brush my cheek. And he kisses me there. It's as brief a kiss as the one he gave me when I was 11, but I'm a woman now, and he is all man.
And suddenly, unexpectedly, his arm starts coming around my waist and he's reeling me toward him, pressing me against his side. Next thing I feel his head dip down slowly toward me, his nose grazing my cheek. My breath catches in my throat, and I feel myself fighting the urge to turn my head just a fraction of an inch and kiss him flat on the mouth. He smells like mint and a little bit of coffee mixed with his cologne. I inhale shakily and feel his lips touch the spot on my cheek where his nose had just been. His lips are warm, soft, yet firm. His hand grips my hip, holding me close to him as he tilts his head and places a kiss on my neck. I let my head fall back, and he chuckles darkly, rubbing his nose lightly against my neck, nuzzling me. He uses his hand to turn my head to face him, and as I look into his eyes, I feel my world tilt on its axis and spin in all directions. Everything else is drowned out as all of the thoughts in my head center around only him and me. All I'm thinking is what I'm feeling, how hard my heart is beating, how my breath is coming in faster intervals, how my skin is warm and tingling, how my whole body seems to be holding its breath in sweet anticipation for Matthew to move again, to touch me again, to kiss another part of me. I whisper his name and he groans, "You feel incredible." He leans in and kisses my collarbone, running his nose along my neck and inhaling me. "God, and you smell so good," he brokenly whispers, his deep voice burning through me, consuming everything in its path and leaving only this deep, almost primal need to be as close to this man as possible. When I feel his tongue between his lips tentatively touch the skin on my neck, I hear myself moan. He holds me closer to him until I'm almost sitting on his lap, his head buried in my neck, kissing and nuzzling, licking and tasting. I start to get worried, wondering where we are and when we will get to the campaign headquarters. I know no one can see us, since his car has black-tinted windows and a partition separating us from his driver. But still, something about this feels dark and forbidden.
Shh. Just let me do this, Charlotte. Please,
he says as he lifts his head from my neck and holds my head between his hands, his eyes gazing into mine and then lowering to my lips, and then traveling back up to my eyes. I feel him inch closer to me, and I slowly start to realize that he wants to kiss me, right now, in this car. Matthew Hamilton, possible future president of the United States and my first crush, wants to kiss me. I reach out and hold his face in my hand too, and his eyes flare. I don't know whether I should do this or not, but right now all I hear my body say is that I need to touch this man. I kiss his cheek, my lips lingering. I feel him relax, but his grip on me tightens. What are we doing?
Sir, we're here.
Matt's detail's mumbled voice sounds through the partition. I think I hear Matt curse under his breath. I inch myself off his lap to sit back in my own seat and inhale a shaky breath as Matt opens his own door and comes around the car to open mine. The look we exchange when we lock eyes as I come out of the car I cannot possibly describe. It's charged with need, lust, longing, curiosity, and something else. I force myself to look away and walk toward the building, the feel of his lips still on my skin.
15. Gets lonely at the top. Matt. That was me being a whole lot reckless and foolish. I've been thinking of red hair, blue eyes, soft lips, and how much I wanted to dip my tongue and taste her. I wanted to open her mouth and kiss her, slow and savoring, then fast and wild. At this point, only both can satiate me. I thought that following that one impulse after the hospital would be enough to calm the fire burning me. It's not. She's been in my head for the past 18 hours. I'm running on no sleep. I need a good workout or my focus scatters, but my schedule couldn't allow one today. My grandfather flew in from Virginia after the resounding success of our first 2 months of campaigning, and my mother, who'd opted to quietly ignore the fact that I'm running, had no other choice but to welcome us for breakfast this morning. I'm aware of early campaign troubles, among them my grandfather. My grandfather was the tireless political engine that drove my father to the Army, to the Senate, and later to the White House. He pulled strings left and right, and put my dad on George Washington's white horse, but it was my dad who rode the horse like he owned it. The one who'd won the re-election by the biggest margin in history, keeping almost 70% of the country happy when polled about his first term. My granddad got him there, but my dad stayed there. I don't want my grandfather's political engine to back me now. It would require sacrificing merit for favors during the appointment of my cabinet. That's a sure way to keep the country from growing and blazing brighter than ever, and that's what has been keeping us from irrefutably being the most powerful force in the world. Habits need to be put aside, new ideas proposed, new blood brought in to freshen up the antiquated outlook on how to run America. The world is changing, and we need to be on the forefront of that change. My grandfather has made it no secret that he wants me on the forefront, but of one of the parties, who like to keep the status quo. I'm the last to arrive at my mother's brownstone. My mother sits in a high chair, regal in pearls and a white designer skirt and jacket. She's a modern Jackie Kennedy, sweet and composed, morally as strong as titanium. There are strong resemblances between our families, the Kennedys and Hamiltons, to the point where the media has speculated, after father's murder, on whether the Hamiltons also have a curse on their heads that won't let them carry out their bright destinies. Mother sits as far away from my grandfather as possible, her hair still the same near-black shade as mine, her poise remarkable. Big, brusque, and no-nonsense, Patrick Hamilton's relationship with my father was a close one. Until my father was gone, my grandfather meddled and insisted I get into politics. The last thing my mother wanted was to see me do that.
Get a life, Matt. Go and study anything you want. Be anything you want.
Except a politician. She didn't say it, but she didn't have to. In her mind, she wouldn't be a widow, but instead a happy wife, had my father not been president. In her mind, she'd have lived a happy life. She led one of duty instead, and she did it formidably, but no makeup and hairstyle can hide the shadows in her eyes, regarding my father's unresolved murder. I kiss her forehead in greeting. I'm sorry this is making you worry. Don't, I command. She smiles lightly at me and pats my jaw.
Matt.
Only one word, but combined with the look in her eyes, I'm quietly reminded that my father was one of five sitting presidents to be killed, all by gunshots. Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, JFK, and Hamilton. I take a seat in the living room, and she signals for Maria, her live-in cook, to bring us coffee.
I had lunch with the Democrats, Grandfather says as he sips his coffee. They want you to join in the primaries. They're sure you'll win the ticket.
I've already told them I'm running independently.
Matt, your father?
I'm not my father, though I do plan to continue his legacy. I glance at my mother, who seems to be battling a mixture of pride and worry.
Why won't you at least consider the Democrats?
Grandfather insists.
Because,
I lean forward, looking him dead in the eye. They failed to protect him. As far as I'm concerned, I'm better off alone. I stare him out. He's not an easy man, but I can be as difficult as he is. My father told me never trust your own shadow. I've kept people at bay, but now I'm choosing who I let in, and out. Out is my competition. I'm letting in my country. They deserve better than what they've gotten lately. I'm going to pave the path for that better.
Fuck, Matt. Really?
Grandfather rants. His temper is formidable, and my mother quickly steps in with her usual soothing charm.
Patrick, I appreciate your voice and your opinions to Matt, but I'm not happy with him even running. Matt,
she turns and looks at me beseechingly.
We gave this country all we had. We gave them your father. We don't owe anyone anything anymore.
Not all we had. There's still Matt, Grandfather says. This is what Lawrence wanted.
I keep my attention on my mother. I know this is her worst nightmare. She doesn't want me to run. I'm finishing what Father started. This is our legacy, all right? I nod firmly, quietly asking for her understanding. She's not over what happened to my father. She shakes her head with her signature stubbornness.
You're still so young, Matt. You're only 35.
Yeah, well, my 35 years count as double. I smile wryly and lean back in my seat, glancing at my grandfather. I was closer to my dad than the vice president for a term and a half. I'm doing this. And when I get to the top, my cabinet will be appointed on merit, not political favors we owe. God damn it, boy. You have a will of your own. But you need to look at the big picture here. The party's resources cannot be denied. I'm not denying them. I simply trust that I have resources of my own to combat them. Grandfather sighs. He stands and buttons his jacket, then kisses my mother on the cheek. Thanks, Eleanor. He looks at me as I come to full height, too. You're making powerful enemies, Matt. I'll be an even more powerful one. He laughs and shakes his head in disbelief, then pats my back and says, I'll support you, then. Grudging and grumpy, he leaves, and my mother sighs. I stare after him. His words hit a bullseye, though not the target my grandfather had aimed for. All of this effort, the dream I'm pursuing, I've been determined to do it alone. I saw what my father's neglect did to my mother. I experienced firsthand what it did to me. I wouldn't want to wish it on someone I cared for. But a red-headed, blue-eyed scheduler with a gentle heart and true love for her country keeps hammering in my head. For the first time, I wonder what it would be like to reach the heights I aspire to with someone by my side. Matt. My mother presses her lips together as she wages an inner battle, the mother's battle between supporting her son and protecting him. You want to use the White House to change the world, and I'll support you. She walks over to me and pulls me into her arms to speak in my ear. But it changes you before you can change a centimeter of it, she says sadly, kissing my cheek. I drag my hand over my face in frustration as I watch her head upstairs. She's a strong woman, but even strength breaks. When Father won, she went from private citizen to public, and handled it with grace and style. The country never saw her quiet suffering as she slowly lost my father to his job, and then to two bullets, one to his stomach and the other to his heart. Yeah, the White House changed us all. But what happens in the White House is reflected across the entire nation, and I'm determined to change things for the better. I still have a busy day ahead when I step outside and climb aboard the black Lincoln that Wilson is parked by the front door. I ride in silence toward my first speaking engagement of the day. In my mind, Charlotte is gasping as I slide my lips across her cheek and toward hers. She's holding her breath as I press softly, testing her, nearly losing control when I realize she wants it. She wants it as much as me. I push the thought aside as the car stops and I step out into the crowd. Matt! I hear my name surround me, and I start shaking hands on both sides of the people flanking me, as many as possible on my path to the main building, thanking them for coming.
16. Coffee. Charlotte. I'm nervous the next day after what happened in the car between Matt and me. I'm at the kitchenette, sort of wondering if I should go and take him coffee. Maybe because I want to talk about it, to know why he kissed me. Or maybe because I want to see him. Before I can think better of it, I pour two cups, remembering the time he brought coffee to my desk the night we both stayed late. I set mine on my desk on the same spot he did, then head to his office and peer past the opening. Can I come in? Matt was looking over some paperwork, and when he lifts his eyes to look at me above the rims of his glasses, my heart trips a little. He nods permission, and I start when I spot Jack getting to his feet from where he was lying by Matt's desk. Hi, Jack, I say awkwardly. I brought you coffee, I then tell Matt as he comes to his feet. As I hand him the warm cup, the dog races toward Matt and jumps up, desperately trying to lick the coffee mug, accidentally spilling its entire contents over Matt's shirt. Jack, down. The dog immediately sits, but the coffee is already soaking into the shirt. Coffee's his weakness. That's definitely something you can't relate to. How does it feel to live a life without vices? I ask. He winks at me as he crosses the room to shut the door. As he passes, he gives me a heated once-over and says, close to my ear, I wouldn't be so sure about that. My stomach feels like he just lit it on fire with the combination of his words and the look in his eyes as he raises his hands and starts unbuttoning his shirt. Suddenly, I'm staring at an expanse of bare chest. He's so hot, I can barely breathe. Though it's a well-published fact that Matt Hamilton looks amazing in clothes, amazing cannot even capture the complete athletic perfection of his shape and form and muscles. Every single muscle of his chest is defined and flexed hard. He's also got silky, dark hairs on his chest, and I find this so hot that liquid heat seems to flood between my legs. Something warm and female starts flickering in my tummy as I stare helplessly at him.
"Hand me that campaign t-shirt," he asks.
I glance at the shelves behind me. I reach over for a white t-shirt with a purple Hamilton 16 logo. It's like a sports jersey. I hand it over, trying hard not to notice how his slacks accentuate his lean hips, how his broad shoulders taper down inverted pyramid style to a narrow waist, and how those freaking abs make me want to trace each square with my fingertips. And those incredible arms, the bulging biceps as he lifts the shirt over his head.
"I like it."
I point nervously at the t-shirt.
"I wanted someone to test it out. Guess I found him."
He pulls it over his head and I swallow. Oh, God. I can't stop flushing. He tosses the stained shirt aside and runs his fingers through his hair. Jack has stealthily gotten up from his ass and is licking the coffee at my feet.
"Oh no, Jack,"
I kneel and try to stop him. Matt comes to grab him by the collar and leads him away.
"Well, I don't think he'll be getting any sleep,"
I say by way of apology.
"That makes two of us."
I watch him smile down at his dog and run his hand over his head, even as he frowns at him for being mischievous.
"You never sleep, do you?"
I blurt out.
He lifts his gaze. "Got a lot on my mind. I'm lucky if I grab a few straight hours."
I watch him grab his sodden shirt and drape it over the back of his chair.
"I could wash that for you, Matt,"
I say. It just sort of slipped out, but I'm mortified a second after I hear myself say it. Matt glances at the shirt.
"I mean, unless you have...
You probably have someone to do your laundry."
"Yeah, my dry cleaners."
He laughs. I feel stupid as he leans over with the napkin I had brought to sop up the coffee, then balls it up and tosses it into the trash can.
"But that's the most titillating proposition I've ever received from a woman."
"Really?
It turns you on to get your clothes washed?"
"I'm as surprised as you are."
I laugh, then I bite my lip and reach out for the shirt hanging on the back of his chair. His eyes are super hot. I steal out of the room with his shirt folded in my arm. I don't sleep more than 4 hours either that night. I can't stop thinking about him, and the fact that we were flirting and his eyes were hot, and he is so very hot, and I'm not sure I like it. I toss and turn, then leap out of bed early in the morning. I'm in the office before almost anyone. I set his clean shirt, perfectly folded, on his desk when he arrives. I know it's perfect because I tried folding it a bazillion times.
"Good morning, Matt."
I walk by and he catches my fingers for a second as I pass.
"Good morning, Charlotte."
17. The Tidal Basin. Charlotte. That day after lunch, Matt stops by my cubicle, where Allison is showing me some pictures of him at an event that are making my toes curl.
"How's my month looking?"
He looks at me, and somehow it feels as if month means a whole other thing. His gaze is that searing. I swallow at the sight of him in a crisp business shirt and plain black pants.
"Busy," I hasten to say.
I don't know how that tiny tilt of his lips can cause such a big tilt in my chest cavity.
"Just the way I like it."
He smiles at me, nods at Allison, and Allison quickly tucks the pictures against her chest and leaves. Matt stays by the entrance for a moment. The area feels a tad smaller as he comes over, walks around my desk, and leans over my shoulder to look at my draft.
"When am I free tonight?"
he asks. A shiver runs down my spine, hearing his voice so close. I try to stop the skip of my heart as I skim down the page and tap my finger to show him.
"Perfect."
He leans over a fraction more to my ear.
"I'll pick you up at 6.
I don't ask him where we're going or why. I simply nod as he walks out. I'm quaking with nervousness as I head home to change. I don't even know what to wear but opt for a skirt and a silky top. For some reason, I keep changing shoes from ballerina flats to pumps, and the instinctive female urge to look feminine and a little sexy wins out. I suppose I'm not proud of this, but there you go. High-heeled, peep-toe pumps it is. At 6 p.m., Matt is downstairs waiting inside a black Lincoln Town Car, his detail, Wilson, opening the door for me. I'm a nervous wreck. The memory of his whisper keeps tingling down my spine, warm and exciting. I climb into the back of the car, surprised to notice Matt is wearing black sweatpants and a black t-shirt. And running shoes. His hair is perfect. He looks like some athletic centerfold for Nike. As Wilson pulls us into traffic, I study my own attire, skirt and a blouse and heels, and finally ask, "We're running?" Matt is staring at my shoes with a tilt to his lips, his eyes rising to mine. "More like some light hiking." Helplessly, I look at my 3-inch heels. "These are going to be a problem," I say. He just smiles at me, but he doesn't look especially heartbroken. "They are." We ride in the back of the town car in silence, and I frown at him, wondering why he doesn't even seem concerned. Matt has never struck me as selfish. "Wilson, stop to get Miss Wells a pair of running shoes."
"Wait, Matt," I protest.
He grabs a white Nike cap from the back of the car and slips on a pair of Ray-Bans. "2 minutes, we're in and out," he tells Wilson as he climbs out and peers back inside. One eyebrow goes up in question. "You coming?" 2 minutes inside the shopping center end up being 20. I try on a pair of white and pink Nikes that I'd always salivated over, and when they fit just right, Matt glances at Wilson, and Wilson takes the box and goes to pay while Matt and I wait outside the store. People are glancing in his direction as if speculating but unsure, and Matt keeps his eye on his phone to avoid getting their attention. When we're back in the car and he jerks off the cap and the sunglasses and sets them aside, I say, "I guess Hamiltons never get any privacy." He smiles at me, but with a haunted look in his eyes.
"Never."
We ride on. He admits,
"I've almost forgotten what it was like when it was simpler."
"Simpler?" "Like taking a hike with me," I realize. "People are going to see." I'm anxious now. "Turn the car around."
He swings his head, shocked. "Excuse me?"
"Turn the car around now, Matt." He chuckles and drags a hand over his face as if I exasperate him. "Really, this can look a way that it's not. Tell him to turn around." I drag my eyes to Wilson, then look back at Matt.
"I can't."
He shakes his head in bemusement. "Why can't you?" I'm getting testy, and so is he.
"It's the only slot on my schedule open, and my only chance to be alone with you for a while."
He looks up at Wilson through the rearview mirror when the car stops and tells him,
"See you at Jefferson Memorial in a couple of hours."
He opens the door for me, and I grab my notepad to keep it professional. His lips quirk when he sees that, but he says nothing as we start heading down the trail, which treks around a large body of blue water surrounded by a path that runs all around the basin's circumference. From here, you can see the Washington Monument, the tall columns and majestic white dome of the Jefferson Memorial, and right up ahead, the spot where the first cherry blossom trees were planted. It's spring, and the trees are fully bloomed, their long, slim limbs dotted with cherry blossoms. It's a chilly day, but the sun warms my face as we walk toward the nearest memorial, which is only a few years old. "I've never taken this walk before," I admit. I take in the huge marble carving of Martin Luther King Jr. "I've only been to this area once, really, when my father brought me to the paddle boats."
"Robert in the paddle boats? That I'd like to have seen."
He seems amused at the thought as I absorb the 30-foot-tall monument of a man whose favorite quote of mine is, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." I realize Matt is watching me, as if he knows the sight by memory, but not the sight of me. My cheeks warm as I start walking down the trail by his side. He glances at our feet, stops walking, and drops to his haunches to lace up my running shoes. I'm breathless as he stands to his full intimidating height and jerks his head toward the white dome across the water.
"See that?"
I look around thinking he spotted some reporters. Call it paranoia. "I don't see,"
I'm trying to figure out if anyone is recognizing him. A 6-feet-plus, gorgeous-looking man. Who's not looking? I quickly open my notepad and pretend to scribble something. He laughs and turns my head to shift me around to face the water. The touch sends a frisson down my spine, and I can't see straight.
Seriously? You think that little notebook makes a difference? People will see what they want to see. This is no different than our morning runs. Now look.
At what?
He laughs softly. Stop talking and look.
Matt turns my face an inch higher over the water, and I see how the monuments reflect in the water doubling the effect of their beauty. I stare at the white classical building across the water.
Oh.
And he's looking at me, at his finger on my chin.
Take me, I say.
Then clear my throat when I see the male laughter in his eyes as I point at the Jefferson Memorial. I mean, take me there. I've never been inside.
That's the plan.
He grins, obviously still just a guy with a guy's mind underneath the famous name. We start forward, my body acutely aware of his moving beside mine. We pass a Japanese stone pagoda and other memorials until we reach the Jefferson Memorial. We take the steps, walk past the tall, white columns, and walk into the cavernous building until we're standing under a huge, domed ceiling. Inscriptions cover the marble walls. Front and center, standing atop a large block of marble, is a massive, 19-foot-tall monument to Jefferson, 3rd President of the United States, one of our founding fathers. We take a bench near one of the panels, one that quotes the Declaration of Independence. I glance around the place. It's one of those memorials that's a little more difficult to access because there's no parking space outside. It feels as if it stands on its own island, away from it all, but so close to the heart of the city at the same time.
Do you always find far-off places to get away and think? I ask Matt.
I usually come alone.
The dark flecks in his eyes look a little blacker as he takes me under the warm yellow lights above us. There's a bright flame there in his eyes.
Except I find myself craving some alone time with you.
His lips tilt in mischief. His smile soon fades and shadows enter his eyes.
It would be easier had I not run. During my father's terms at the White House, I used to dream about freedom. 1,000 times my father said I would be president. He told his friends' friends, and he often told me. I'd laugh and shake it off.
He even told me, I say good-naturedly,
and the warmth of his smile sends shivers through me. He makes no effort to hide the fact that he's looking at me tenderly.
He did, didn't he?
His eyes. They just eat me up.
I lost my father the day he decided that being president would be his legacy.
His eyes are leveled on mine beneath his drawn eyebrows.
He'd tried juggling it all, but he couldn't do it. We kept thinking when it was over, he'd be ours again. He kept promising when it was over, he'd have time for us again.
I swallow a lump of emotion in my throat. I know what comes next.
Never happened.
The cold glint in his eyes sends a chill through me.
It's been thousands of days since. Too many years spent living in the past, too many years wondering why, too many nights wanting things to be right in our country.
We're silent. There's a tension emanating from him, pulsing around me, tempting me to draw my arms around him and simply crush him against me, if that were even possible. Matt glances at the statue and drags a hand across his jaw.
Charlotte, I have enormous respect for you and your family. In so many ways, I feel responsible for you.
Matt, you're not responsible for me.
I'm not supposed to want you,
he says, cutting me off.
What?
My eyes widen in disbelief.
What can I say when he looks at me in that way?
He's looking at me as if he's frustrated that he wants me. Silence settles between us.
I think of you. I think of you too often, if you ask me, he says.
I nervously tuck a loose strand of hair behind my ear and stare at my lap.
I think of you too.
My comment seems to come as no surprise.
So what are we going to do about it?
he asks softly. Nothing, I say.
He laughs and drags a hand over his face and tisks, shaking his head. Nothing's just not in my vocabulary. Is it risky? Yes. Is it selfish on my part? Maybe. But I'm not just going to do nothing.
I swallow. Matt.
I glance around nervously, trying to steer away from the path this conversation has taken.
Have you realized people could talk if anyone recognized us? Why did you bring me here?
Isn't it obvious? I knew you'd love it here.
I laugh. I really do, you wicked man.
I try to push at his chest teasingly, but he catches my wrist and pulls me closer, his eyes darker. I'm so wicked, you have no idea. He's looking at my mouth, not as if he wants to kiss it.
Matt is staring at my mouth as if he means to devour it. You know you can't kiss me, I croak,
even as we now look at each other's lips. He brushes his thumb over my lips. I can kiss you. I definitely want to kiss you. I think we both know I mean to kiss you. Long and hard. I want my tongue rolling around yours, Charlotte. And I want your delicate little moans, too.
God help me. I'm pretty sure nothing could stop this man from getting anything he wants. Nothing. Except maybe me. Because Rhonda is right. What we're doing together transcends me, transcends even him. And even though I'm 22, I know that getting Matt back into the White House will be the biggest thing I ever did. Except, C is for campaigning. We can't do something foolish,
I say, trying to brainwash myself that I don't want this just as much. He smiles tenderly. If you'd ask me right now, C is for Charlotte coming in my arms. Shocked and breathless by his bluntness, I turn to stare blindly at the inscription of freedom on the wall across from me, of all of us having freedom. And yet, I have never been more aware of not having the freedom to fall in love with this man.
There won't be any of that, I say.
Matt slides his hand to stroke the top of mine, pausing and leaving it over mine when a group of teenagers shuffles into the cavern. And he tightens his jaw and remains silent, as, fortunately, they don't glance our way. I shift on the bench, an inch away from his touch, then turn back to Matt and narrow my eyes in exaggerated suspicion, wondering how many women have caught his interest, and how long it lasts.
Why aren't you married yet, anyway?
I'm waiting for her to grow up. He's leaning forward now to recover the space I just put between us, his eyes dancing in a way that makes my heart thud a million miles an hour.
Well,
I fumble for a reply. I suppose that's why you're a playboy. You've been practicing all this time so your child bride can eventually enjoy your expertise. She will definitely enjoy it. He nods in mock somberness.
Okay,
I say flippantly, as if my stomach isn't flipping and I'm not clenching my thighs together in my seat. Matt's eyebrow quirks. You don't believe me?
Oh, I don't want a sample, thank you. Besides, you can't take a woman like me.
Woman? He scoffs. You're what, 18 years old? He leans back and stretches his arm out behind me, eyeing me. 18 to your 50, I shoot back. He's leaning forward again, his shoulder touching mine, and the teasing in his eyes has become more dangerous and exciting, a little more challenging. One day I'll do all the things I need to. And she'll be mine. Mark my words.
Does she know this yet? I ask quietly.
I just told her, he says.
His voice is thick and low, but his eyes are still alight with mischief. Maybe. Maybe she's already yours.
Is she?
Just a little bit,
I say, lifting my thumb and index finger to draw a centimeter. He glances at my fingers, then at me. I'm not a man that is satisfied with just a little bit. He smiles.
That's all she's got.
He shakes his head. She can do better. Much better. The teenagers shuffle out of the memorial, and Matt and I are left alone again. He slides his hand to cup the back of my neck in a proprietary gesture. Then he gazes into my eyes with such a possessive look that a million butterflies flutter in my stomach.
A smile begins to tug at the corners of his mouth. Come here, Charlotte, he softly commands. I sort of freeze. He said he doesn't mean to do nothing, and now I can see in his eyes he's got a whole lot of something in mind. Matt's smile fades, and he grabs the back of my neck and pulls me closer. Then he leans his forehead on mine, his eyes holding me spellbound. They'll try to find dirt on me. Anything they can find. I don't want you to be on that list. You're better than 3 minutes on the evening news meant to attack my character.
I might not be concerned about me if it didn't affect you, I breathe.
I can handle their attacks. I don't want them laying them on you.
He angrily lashes.
He scrapes his thumb across my lower lip. Impulsively, I lick the pad of his finger. For one heartbeat, his eyes streak with need. Then he gingerly tips up my face as he lowers his to bring our eyes to the same level.
First he nuzzles my nose and strokes his thumb again across my lower lip. He presses gently down on my lip to open my mouth. My eyes drift shut. Every thought in my head scatters to nothing when he swoops down and takes my mouth with his. Everything falls away. He kisses me gently the first second, and then, without apology, deeply, like the revving of a rocket engine, followed by the launch into space, and then I'm in a galaxy of pure bright stars and endless night, lost and weightless, warmed by a sun I cannot see, his mouth a hungry vortex, a delicious black hole, sucking me in. He holds my face in one hand, doing the most wicked things to my tongue until he tears his lips away, glancing at my mouth. He looks at my kissed lips as he slips his hand beneath my skirt, touching the bare skin on the inside of my thigh. His fingertip touches me over my underwear, trailing a feather-like path across my wet sacks. It's a ghost touch, barely there, but it causes a shudder to run through me. I moan, and his forehead hovers above mine as we both pant and brush our lips across the others. Matt licks my bottom lip, then inside my mouth before he retreats. He sets his face on mine and smells my neck. He groans again and kisses me, tongue plunging heatedly inside, pulling back seconds later. Are you torturing me?
I gasp, so aroused my whole body is shaking. He's breathing hard, his chest expanding with each breath. If I'm torturing you, then what I'm doing to myself has no name.
You're unobtainable, Matt.
I look at his GQ cover face.
Matt Hamilton, you're so unobtainable, you're like a poster, something I can look at but not touch.
A dark look settles in his gaze as he leans forward again.
I'm thoughtless, mindless, as he presses his lips to mine, a kiss with just one flick of his tongue. So perfect and so right, I forget that it's wrong.
I inhale, and he inhales me through his mouth. I groan his name this time.
Matt.
It cannot work. It won't work. The scandal it would cause, the way it would ruin everything that he, that we, are so methodically working for. I'll find a way to get you alone with me. I want to spend time with you. I want to feel more of you. He rasps, kissing my earlobe, his breath hot and haggard on my skin as he lets his fingers trail up and down my thigh, beneath my skirt. His fingers sweep across my panties again, eliciting another mewl from my lips.
I'd like that,
I moan when he rubs my nub a little. He looks down at me with primal possessiveness, watching me catch my breath and moan as he rubs harder, when a new group of people walk into the monument. He clenches his jaw, then smoothly pulls his hand away.
I breathe. Is this a mistake?
It won't be. His voice is firm, eyes flashing and determined as he lifts his head to scan the crowd. Let's go, he says gently, taking my elbow and guiding me. We head back to the car in silence, his hand on the small of my back as he guides me into the back seat, his touch searing, reminding me of where else his fingers have just been.
Matt. I usher Charlotte into the car, and Wilson shoots me a look through the rearview mirror when we settle in. I shoot one back that tells him to save it. I close the partition between us, and my gaze lands on Charlotte. She sits quietly in the back of the car, and I can't fucking shake off the taste of her in my mouth. My heart is kicking into my ribcage, my body wound up with desire. The feel of the damp spot I caressed between her legs is seared on my fingertips. I might excel at being in control, and I may feel protective of her, but I'm a man. I have instincts, I have needs, and those needs have been building up, every day looking at her, every